You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to our third and final of three podcasts titled Clinical Pearls for Community-Based Oncologists, What's Driving Disease Progression in Patients with HER2-Positive Disease, ADC Therapy and NSCLC, hosted by Med Learning Group. The series is directed toward community-based oncologists, pathologists, and NPs and PAs who care for patients with non-small cell lung cancer. In this episode, we'll be discussing the important management considerations for the use of antibody drug conjugates, or ADCs, in patients with HER2-positive non-small cell lung cancer, or NSCLC. Joining me today is Dr. Julia Roto, Clinical Director at the Lowe Center for Thoracic Oncology at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute in Boston, Massachusetts. She is widely published and is focused on sharing her knowledge to help improve care for as many patients as possible. Dr. Roto, welcome to our discussion.
Thank you, James. Happy to be here today discussing this exciting new therapeutic target in lung cancer.
Great. So Dr. Roto, we've previously discussed HER2 testing, as well as the role of HER2 targeting ADCs in non-small cell lung cancer. For our third and final podcast in the series, let's address some of the key management considerations in the use of ADCs in these patients with HER2-positive non-small cell lung cancer.
It's a great question and an important consideration when initiating therapy for these patients. And we've talked already about the importance of finding these patients with HER2-positive disease because they now have therapeutic options that are targeted and our various options to target HER2 in this patient population. The next question is, how do you manage patients who are receiving HER2-directed therapy, and in particular, trastuzumab deruxtecan therapy for HER2-positive lung cancer? So I'd like to lead off with a case study, and we'll go through a series of patient cases where we discuss management of toxicities of treatment. So our first case we'll discuss is a 55-year-old woman. She has a metastatic HER2 exon 20 insertion positive lung adenocarcinoma. She had received standard first-line therapy with chemoimmunotherapy, carboplatin, pemetrexed, pembrolizumab, and then at subsequent disease progression, had gone on to receive the HER2 ADC trastuzumab deruxtecan in the second-line setting. They've had a treatment response and had been doing well on therapy, but recently had reached out to your office and had reported some new shortness of breath and cough, and that led to a clinic evaluation for these new respiratory symptoms. And I always consider respiratory symptoms to be a very important symptom to very carefully assess in patients on HER2-directed ADCs, because we know ILD is a real risk for these patients on treatment, and you can help to mitigate that risk by identifying ILD early if it occurs and taking appropriate management steps. So in this case, this patient is seen in clinic. She's breathing comfortably on room air with an O2 saturation of 95%. She has some mild bilateral crackles, no edema, and no other significant exam findings. Her other relevant mass medical history is a history of chronic kidney disease with a baseline creatinine around 1.2 to 1.4, but otherwise in good health. This patient appropriately receives a CT chest as a diagnostic test to further evaluate her respiratory symptoms. And in this case, the CT chest does reveal bilateral ground glass opacities. And the question can then be raised, how best to manage this finding? What to do about the patient's trastuzumab deruxtecan? Can they resume treatment if held? And do they need steroids to manage this presentation? I'll start off by saying that for this patient, optimal treatment would involve actually discontinuing treatment permanently and initiating steroid therapy. And the question is, who needs this sort of strategy and who can resume treatment?
So Dr. Roto, in this patient, what would be some additional diagnostic considerations?
Absolutely. So when I hear ground glass infiltrates bilateral diffuse on CT with respiratory symptoms in a patient with a drug known to potentially trigger this, my mind does go straight to pneumonitis when I think of these management of these patients. But it's important to keep a broader differential. Just as when you see pneumonitis on other TKIs or on checkpoint inhibitors, there are other entities which can mimic this sort of presentation that should be considered, particularly things like infectious etiologies or atypical infections if the patient has been on significant steroid dosing recently. And it's always important to also consider referral to pulmonary medicine if there's diagnostic uncertainty or if presentation is more severe and you're concerned about higher risk presentations. But here, combination of respiratory symptoms, bilateral ground glass, really does to me say drug-associated pneumonitis until proven otherwise in this sort of patient. And in that case, for symptomatic pneumonitis, the recommendation is to go ahead and initiate systemic steroid therapy. Now, the prescribing information for trastuzumab deruxtecan does specifically address pneumonitis. And we know that in pooled rates, there's about a 12% rate of ILD in the kind of non-small cell lung cancer solid tumor population and a 1% rate of fatal ILD. So that's why it's so important to recognize and treat this diagnosis, try to reduce the risk of more severe presentations. There's also some suggestion that having moderate renal impairment might increase that rate of ILD a bit, just like in this patient who had some moderate CKD. So when you're starting a patient on therapy, number one, the recommendation is to be sure that the patient knows about this risk, that they and their family know about the symptoms of ILD so that they can seek care if they develop those symptoms at home. Things like new or worsening cough, shortness of breath, or fever all should trigger evaluation. If ILD is suspected, number one, you should get a CT chest really without delay to evaluate for evidence of inflammatory changes. And then when it comes to management, the key divide is whether a patient is asymptomatic, that counts as grade one pneumonitis, or symptomatic, counts as grade two or higher pneumonitis. And for any patient with symptomatic disease, it's important to actually discontinue the drug permanently. You wouldn't want to re-challenge if they were symptomatic and you want to begin steroid treatment. Usually that's at prednisone about a mg per kg daily, followed by a gradual taper, though there is some variation in that depending on severity of presentation. And for patients with more severe symptoms or hypoxia or other more concerning findings, hospital admission and intravenous steroids may also become appropriate. So we could consider a second case really addressing the question of asymptomatic pneumonitis. So what if a very similar patient who's receiving trastuzumab deruxtecan therapy is feeling well, and you see her in clinic for routine follow-up scans. And on those scans, you see something similar, bilateral ground glass opacities in a patient who otherwise is feeling well with no respiratory symptoms. And the question would be, how can you manage this? And here we're dealing with what's considered to be grade one or asymptomatic pneumonitis. So here there is a little more flexibility in management. You still need to hold the drug for asymptomatic pneumonitis in this setting. But unlike symptomatic disease, here you do have the option to re-challenge with the drug if the patient remains asymptomatic and the radiographic findings resolve. And if they resolve quickly, in that case defined as under 4 weeks, you have the option to resume at the same dose of treatment and continue monitoring closely. And for a patient who takes longer for those radiographic changes to resolve, defined as more than 4 weeks, then when you do resume treatment, you want to reduce the dose by one dose level. And in either scenario, if you're re-challenging with the drug, it's very important to counsel the patient carefully about symptoms of pneumonitis and to have a very low threshold for repeat CTC scanning if any symptoms of concern do develop.
Well, those are great points, especially distinguishing between the different grades of pneumonitis and how physicians should be considering that in their patients. Would you have any other additional considerations that might be pertinent to discuss?
Absolutely. So another toxicity that comes up in some patients is risk of cardiac toxicity. And we've seen this for other ERBB2 family member targeted therapies. So for example, in EGFR targeted therapies, you've seen reports of cardiotoxicity. And same thing here with HER2 antibody drug conjugates. There have been reported rates of reduced left ventricular ejection fraction or other cardiac adverse effects of therapy. So this is another side effect that should be monitored for during treatment and may require modification of treatment if it were to develop. So we'll talk about another case. In this case, a 66-year-old gentleman, history of hypertension, who was also seen in follow-up on trastuzumab deruxtecan for a HER2 mutant lung cancer. He's been on treatment for 6 months. He's had an ongoing response to therapy, and he's tolerating treatment well with some stable fatigue. On exam, his vital signs are very normal. He's not hypoxic. And his only medication otherwise is amlodipine for a history of hypertension. So he has been having scans. He's seen routine follow-up, and these show continued response to treatment. He also has a surveillance transthoracic echocardiogram, which shows a reduced left ventricular ejection fraction at 43% from his baseline ejection fraction of 52% at start of treatment. He is asymptomatic. He has no lower extremity edema or increased shortness of breath to suggest symptomatic CHF. And he's in clinic for the next cycle of treatment with trastuzumab deruxtecan. And the question is, does this require a dose hold or a dose modification? So the package insert does offer guidance for how to manage change in left ventricular function on treatment. And this is something where for patients on therapy, they should receive both baseline and periodic transthoracic echocardiograms or other assessment of LVEF to monitor for evidence of dysfunction on therapy. So for patients with asymptomatic changes in LVEF, the absolute change, so the absolute number, and the change from the patient's baseline both should be considered when deciding whether treatment can be continued and when deciding how frequently to recheck therapy and whether dose modifications are needed. So for patients with an asymptomatic LVEF of at least 40% and less than a 10% decrease from baseline, it's okay to continue treatment with the trastuzumab deruxtecan and plan for a close interval repeat assessment, usually around 3 weeks later. But for patients who have a drop in their LV ejection fraction to under 40% or a 20% or more decrease from their baseline, in this case, you should hold the drug pending that repeat interval assessment. And for patients where the LVEF recovers quickly, you're able to resume at a similar dose or a dose reduction, depending on the degree of change. And for those where it does not recover quickly, then you may need to consider actually discontinuing treatment with the drug. These guidance, I have to say, are complex, and I definitely would encourage anyone who is facing abnormal echocardiogram findings on treatment, check the prescribing information for the drug, because there are some very nice and detailed guidance there to help you know how to integrate your findings with optimal treatment recommendations. So one additional toxicity that also sometimes comes up on therapy are neutropenia or other cytopenias. And I mentioned in a prior recording that one of the most common grade 3 or higher toxicities that's seen on treatment is neutropenia. So there are specific guidance prescribed in the prescribing information for how to manage neutropenia for these patients. And this is quite consistent with how we manage neutropenia and other agents with a cytotoxic element. So for patients with a grade 4 neutropenia, that's an ANC dropped under 500, or febrile neutropenia, you want to hold until the ANC is recovered to at least 1,000, and then you can resume with a dose reduction. And for patients with grade 3 neutropenia without fever, you can resume without a dose reduction once that ANC recovers. So this is something you want to monitor, as you do in most other settings, with a CBC with differential prior to each dose. Ensure the patient's ANC is appropriate to continue on therapy.
Well, that is all the time we have for today. I would like to thank our expert, Dr. Julia Roto, for taking the time to speak about important management considerations for use of antibody drug conjugates, or ADCs, in patients with HER2-positive non-small cell lung cancer. And thanks to all our listeners for joining us. This podcast was brought to you by MedLearning Group. MedLearning Group is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians. The CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials. I would also like to give a special thank you to our educational grant supporter, Daiichi Senko, AstraZeneca Alliance, who provided an unrestricted educational grant for this activity. Have a great day.